Greetings to all of God's people. Today we're going to discuss the doctrine of heaven and hell, since it is in the mind of many people, and obviously an awful lot of people have different ideas about it, and it's always important to know and to understand it from God's point of view and not what we have been handed for centuries or thousands of years, because this is not what determines whether it is truth or not. It's not how long you've known it, how long you've believed it, and whatever convictions we have, or how much faith we have in it, it's basically the acid test. You know, is it of God or is it not of God? Is it biblical? Is it truth? God wants us to worship Him in truth and in spirit, not through a mixture of truth and error, or an awful lot of lies and a little bit of truth, or even a lot of truth and a little bit of error. He wants totality of purity. So let's consider this issue and consider many points, and the scripture more than anything else, because that's the source of truth. Now, there are basically three religions that believe in God. Now, many religions on the face of the earth, but they have, you know, basically what we call in the Western world, heathenism. That is, heathens and pagans, you know, they believe in many deities. But basically, there are three religions who believe in the same God. They believe in the doctrine of heaven and hell, among other things. And the three claim that this doctrine came from their holy books. That is the Bible for Judaism and Christianity, and the Quran for Islam. And Judaism is basically, as the people in this religion regard themselves, they've been around since the days of Abraham and since Moses. When the law was given in Sinai, they understand, they believe, and they teach that alongside with all the teachings they have received from Father Abraham, and especially through Moses, there was always a knowledge of the reward and the punishment. And the reward of the righteous will be going to heaven, and the punishment will be you go to hell. Or you're going to burn, going to be destroyed. And that's a basic concept that you find out in the Jewish, that you find in the Jewish community, that is, especially in the past 2,000 years. And of course, there are many other concepts of what happens after death. And Christianity, that's the second religion, and that's basically only 2,000 years. And from the days of Jesus Christ, as the members of Christianity, you know, the religion of Christianity see themselves, a religion that came from Judaism, that was the root. And of course, they believe in the Bible, and mainly in Christianity, they emphasize the New Testament, while of course the Jews they believe in the Old Testament, as it is called in the world. There's the new and the old. So you have two religions there. And then you have Islam, which basically came about in the 6th century. And that was 6th century after the rise of Christianity. Yet basically the three believe in the doctrine of heaven and hell. And they have variations, obviously, within this doctrine. Now it's important to have a reality check at this point. Up to Philo Judaeus, who was a Jewish philosopher that lived between 20 BC to 50 AD, Judaism did not believe in the immortality of the soul, nor in going to heaven or going to hell. That doctrine was just not there. People take it for granted that it has been, but it was not. When you study the scriptures and you study history, you realize that Jews did not have this doctrine. The only time they would believe in the immortality of the soul is when they went into the heathen, when they went into idolatry. And they took on the beliefs of the Babylonians or the Egyptians or others, and then they, you know, would introduce this doctrine, obviously, into their religion. But not as long as they worshipped God, not as long as they believed Moses or followed the teachings in the Bible. Some people take it for granted that in Judaism this knowledge, supposed knowledge or understanding of heaven and hell, has been from the days of Abraham. And it wasn't. And so Philo, who was a Jewish philosopher in Alexandria, that was around the more or less the first century. He lived during the time of Christ. History tells us from 20 BC to 50 AD. very well respected, highly respected in the Jewish community. He lived in Alexandria, which was a major center of the Jewish community, and yet he was a Hellenized philosopher. In other words, he was influenced by the Hellenistic views of life. He was heavily influenced by Plato's teachings and his belief in the immortality of the soul. And so Philo came to believe in it too. And yet, it was not something that his father believed in, or his grandparents, or his community. He believed it. And so gradually he began to introduce it, being very influential in the community, a philosopher, gradually began to introduce the doctrine and belief into the Jewish community, at least in Alexandria. And it gradually it had gained acceptance throughout the Jewish community worldwide. And yet, in the first century, in Israel, in the land where a part of the Jewish community still existed and survived there under Rome, that knowledge was not there. And until you study the scriptures, you don't realize that, and especially when you study also historic accounts. There was no doctrine of afterlife in terms of immediately after death. You're going into some other place, be it either heaven or hell or somewhere in between. All Jews in that generation looked to the resurrection, to the judgment day in the last day, at the end of the age. You see, they didn't look for life immediately after death. They knew when they're dead, they're dead. They're going to be buried and they're going to have to wait until the end of time, whenever that end of time is. And only then, when the resurrection occurs, then they'll come back to life. But in between, there is no knowledge or faith or belief or teaching at the time of the Egyptians or the Babylonians or other pagan religions, where immediately after you die, your soul goes to either heaven or hell or somewhere in between, or other places. Now the Pharisees, which were the majority of the people of in the Jewish community, they believed in the resurrection. In other words, they believed when they die, they are going to the grave, they are going to wait there until the end of time. Because all the scriptures taught them that, and we're going to go through that very thoroughly. As for the Sadducees, somehow they lost that knowledge and understanding and faith, because they basically claimed to follow Moses, and Moses didn't talk much about, hardly any, about the resurrection. And so since they didn't see it there, and the prophets did speak about the resurrection, they did not follow the prophets, they followed only Moses. So they did not even believe in the resurrection. That is, at the end time. They just believe that, well, God gave us life, we're going to live it, and we should be thankful for what we have in this life, and when we are dead, that's it, we're gone, that's the end of the story. And so we read it, and when we come to the New Testament, we see it very plainly. The Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection, they did not believe in the afterlife, they did not believe in spirits, they did not believe in angels. That's how far they went. But, regardless, you see that either factions in the Jewish community did not believe in the so-called going to heaven or going to hell doctrine, or the heaven and hell doctrine, as later on it became known. Now, in the religion of Christianity that arose at the time, as people call it, Christianity, the Bible never does. This is a later invention, and then they take it for granted. This is Christianity. The Jewish brethren, who were a part of the followers of the body of Christ, the followers of the Messiah, as they regard him to be the Messiah, they obviously, coming from the Jewish community, they did not believe in the doctrine of heaven and hell because it was not existent in the community. There was no such teaching. As for the non-Jews, who came from the Greek world, from Eastern religions, as the word spread around, and more Gentiles were being called. The Apostle Paul was going to Gentile cities and areas, and some of them were being grafted. And what most people don't realize God was not calling the Gentiles. God was calling individuals among the Gentiles, and that's a huge difference. You see, he was just calling a few of them. No more than he was calling the whole Jewish community, he was calling few of them. See, few are called and many, you know, the many are called and few are chosen. But only few of them were being called. God was not interested at the time of delivering all mankind. That was not according to the plan. That was coming at the end time. And so the few of the Gentiles that were being called, largely by the ministry of the Apostle Paul and then Barnabas and then those who came after them, well, they brought their own concepts with them. Now, to the degree that they believed the religion that Paul was teaching them, they discarded those notions of heaven and hell. They began to understand, just like all the Commonwealth of Israel, that when you die, you go to the grave, and then you await the resurrection at the end time. But as time went by, you know, they began to go back to their own habits, their own concepts, their own ideas and philosophies that they brought with them, so they began to incorporate the former teachings that they had in their religions into their new called religion, Christianity. And yet that was not the teachings of the Bible, be it the Old or the New Testament, as later on became known. And so they did not believe in the resurrection and the judgment day. They believed in the afterlife. In other words, as soon as you die, you go someplace, to another world. They did not believe in the last day, judgment of God or resurrection. And so you see a split there in the beginning of the formation of the followers of Christ, which later on became known as Christianity. And yet the people that really followed Christ and all of his teachings, they did not call themselves by that name. And even when they were called Christians, they did not call themselves, others called them, in other words, Messianic. They didn't call themselves that. They didn't use this terminology. They were known as Nazarites, they were known as Ebionites, you know, they had different names, but as time went by and the majority of the people that followed Christ became, in other words, when they were largely of the Gentile mold and not of the Jewish, then they gradually began to develop their own theology, and a major part of it was their own teachings that they brought from the past, from their own religions. And the doctrine of heaven and hell figured very heavily into it. And then we have the Islam, a third religion, or the Muslims, as they were called, from Islam, the religion that was, in a sense, you might say, either promoted or invented or whatever, you know, by Muhammad, the prophet. That began in the 6th century, and basically all the people that became believers in this religion or followers of Muhammad, they were all former pagan worshippers. They believed many deities, and that's what Muhammad was trying to win them off and to bring them into the belief of one God. And so he read the Bible, he read the Old Testament, he read the New Testament, and then obviously he began to see the truth in it. And so he began to lead them in that direction, to the faith and to the belief in one God. And of course he claimed to be his only prophet, or the later time prophet of God and the ultimate truth. The final truth, in essence, supersedes all those that came before him, including Jesus Christ. That's the way he viewed it. That's the way he promoted it. And that's the way those who followed him believed it. And they do to this very day. Well, being former pagans, obviously they bring their own teachings with them too. That's the nature of people. And so he, in essence, included teachings of the Old Testament and teachings on the New Testament. And so you see that respect within the religion of both segments of the scriptures, and you know the personalities in it, be it Moses or Abraham or David or Jesus Christ and apostles and Mary and others. Of course, I had personal problems with the believers in these two religions, but generally speaking, they still had respect for the personalities of these two religions. And so they like the Christians and like the, you know, the former teachings, which believed in heaven and hell, they basically continued to believe in the same thing. And by that time, the Jewish community already accepted, long time, the concept of the heaven and hell, the immortality of the soul. So in essence, they basically followed the same teachings, believing them to be true. And so they believed in the afterlife, in the immortality of the soul, just like the Egyptians and the Babylonians. And they believed that when you die, you go to paradise and so forth. And so they, in essence, merged through Muhammad, Jewish and Christian, that is Jewish as it became, not as it used to be. Not biblical Judaism. You know, a lot of people don't realize in Judaism there are two religions. In essence, there is biblical Judaism that is basically strictly based on the Bible. And then there is rabbinic Judaism that is a mixture of biblical teachings and then the teachings of the rabbis. And so, in essence, merged what became known as Judaism with what became known as Christianity, and some of the old notions that they had, you know, the old teachings they had in the past, and that became Islam. And in that religion now, Islam, they believed in the immortality of the soul, they believed in paradise, which happens after death, that is immediately after death, as for those who do good, or do the will of Allah, as they think, or do the things that are pleasing in the sight of God. And they did not believe in the concept of the last day resurrection, obviously, and the judgment day, where we all must stand before the judgment seat of Christ and of God. And of course, we must ask ourselves. I mean, you can study all these religions and all their faith and doctrines and beliefs and all that, and most people are raised into those religions, they don't question anything, they take them for granted. Just take it for granted that the doctrine of immortality of the soul, of heaven and hell and all those things have been forever. You know, they don't question those things. They don't go into the Bible to find out. And those who call themselves Christians are just the same. And those who are in Islam are doing the same. And so it is in every religion. People don't question. Where did I come from? Where did my knowledge come from? Is it true? You see? And so, since we want to know the truth, we should ask ourselves, what does the Bible say about it? That is for us who believe in the Bible. Of course, for those who believe in the Quran, well, they're stuck with it. That's all they have. When we go to the Bible, we begin to find out something totally different. So let's begin with Revelation 12. Revelation 12 tells us something very interesting. It tells us about the people of God, described here in verse 1, as a woman. And that's speaking specific about the nation of Israel, the commonwealth of Israel. And we read in chapter 12, verse 1, "Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars." And this is basically speaking about the 12 stars. That means the 12 tribes of Israel. And you remember the dream of Joseph, speaking about the moon and the stars and the sun. Similar to that, basically it's speaking about Israel. As you continue, you know, reading, you find out very, very plainly what it is talking about. Verse 2, "Then being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth, and another sign appeared in heaven, behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems, that is crowns, on his head. And he still drew a third of the stars," speaking about the angels that became demons. Obviously, you have to understand what the symbolism and the meanings of all these things, the metaphors. "And he threw them to the earth." And, you know, when you study the rest of the Bible, you basically realize what is happening here. There is Israel. She gives birth to the Messiah. And Israel is a woman that is made of the 12 tribes of Israel. And she gives birth. Of course, it was a specific tribe that did it, but here she's described as the entirety of the commonwealth of Israel. And the devil, later on, as you should read, you know, the dragon is the devil. He's the one that rebelled against God, and he took one third of the angels with him, as you read in other places. And they became demons. And so it says, "And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as it was born. And then when you read the beginning of the history of Jesus Christ, that's exactly what happened. Through Herod, he was trying to destroy the new child, you know, the Messiah of Israel, the King of Israel, the Deliverer of Israel, that came out of Israel, and in specific of the tribe of Judah, and in specific of the family of David. And so verse 5, she bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. So it was going to be the Messiah, the Deliverer, the Redeemer, and the ruler of all humanity as he is coming to be. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne, which what happened, you know, this is exactly what happened after the resurrection. So it's in essence synchronizing, capsulizing in essence all this information, and this is what you read here in few words. And verse 6, then the woman fled into the wilderness. Now at this point, it's talking about, in specific, the faithful, the ones that followed the Messiah. And so now he's switching from the entirety of the nation to the few among them who believed in their King, in their Savior, in their Messiah, who was also their divine ruler from the days of Abraham and Moses. In other words, this was the King of Israel. This was the God of Israel who came and was manifested as the Son of God, the Lamb of God. And so the ones that became his believers, which basically mostly at the time was still of the Commonwealth of Israel, so that's why it continues the story in that sense. That woman, that church, that body of believers, these people of Israel and the Gentiles that were with them in other places, they fled into the wilderness. And basically the one that fled from Judea was the body of believers that were made mostly of the Jewish people. In other words, of the Commonwealth of Israel. Well, anyway, it continues the story, you know, that she fled away in verse 7, and war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon and his angels fought. Now, it's talking about a future event, but of course, in the Bible, you read it all as one story, and so if you don't understand all the details, you get mixed up. But it's talking about a future time that is going to happen. Other places we'll see it described, as we shall come to it later on. In Daniel, for example, chapter 12, it's speaking about this event as happening at the end time, right before the return of the Messiah. And so it says, but they did not prevail, that is the dragon and his demons did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer, so they couldn't go anymore up to heaven. And so the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, you know, the serpent that appeared in the Garden of Eden to Mother Eve. So this is the dragon called the devil and Satan. So it gives you his identity. And this devil and Satan, it says, who deceives the whole world. Not a part of it, not some, but everybody. You know, generally speaking. Of course, there are a few individuals who are still remaining in the light. But generally speaking, God makes it very plain that the entirety of mankind is under the sway of the devil, being deceived, believing that their religions are true. Every religion thinks our religion is true. You see? And the teachers within that religion, be it Buddhism, Shintoism, be it Judaism, be it, you know, Christianity, be it any religion, Islam, they all believe that their teachings are true. And yet God says that Satan deceives the whole world. You see? And even though they think their teachings are true, God says they're all deceived. In many ways. Not that they totally are deceived, but there's a lot of deception in their teachings. And this being, this devil, this Satan, this dragon, he was cast to the earth, and his angels, that is his demons, were cast out with him. And so the point we want to make here is that though people, be it in Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Buddhism or Shintoism, whatever it may be, though they believe that they have the truth, every one of them claims to have the truth and they believe the truth and the teachings are true, especially of the three religions that we want to talk about, and especially we want to talk about mainly about the teachings in Judaism and Christianity, That is, as it is known in the past 2,000 years, you know, they all believe that their faith is from God. It's from the Bible. And therefore, the teaching of heaven and hell is also from the Bible. And therefore, it is true. And so much of their theology revolves around that. And yet God says the whole world is deceived. And we're going to find out today, in this lecture. It might take a couple of tapes, two or three tapes, I don't know how long. But we're going to find out what God taught in contrast to what the devil did teach humanity. And that's how he deceives the whole world, to make them believe lies. And this doctrine we're going to find out very clearly from the Bible, from the words of the God of Israel, from the word of Jesus Christ, from the word of his prophets. This doctrine of heaven and hell is nothing but lies. One of the deceptions, one of the major deceptions that was taught by the devil to all mankind. And yet people think that it is true. And so we need to know, we want to ask ourselves, what is it that the Bible say about this doctrine, in contrast to what we've been taught? After all, if the devil deceives the whole world, then we should take it for granted that we've been deceived, even though we think we are in the light, in the truth. And so, let's find out what are some of the teachings of this woman that we just read about, you know, the Commonwealth of Israel, from the beginning of time, and to this very day. That is the true teachings. And Jesus Christ, you know, told his disciples that God is spirit, and he wants to be worshipped in truth and in spirit, not in lies, not mixture of truth and error, but in truth and in spirit. It's a spiritual truth. And so let's find out what are the teachings of the Bible, what are the teachings of God, what are the teachings of Jesus Christ, what are the teachings of the prophets, what are the teachings of Israel before it became deceived. And to the degree that some members of this Israel, the Commonwealth of Israel, and the followers of God in Jesus Christ follow the strict teachings of the Bible, they don't believe in the doctrine of heaven and hell. But to the degree that they follow the devil, which makes the whole world believe that the religion is true, well, obviously, they believe in the doctrine of heaven and hell. So, let's see what the Bible was recorded to this very day, that everyone can read and see and comprehend and understand very plainly, in contrast to what we already believe. That is, if we believe in the doctrine of heaven and hell, whatever else we believe. Let's begin with the book of Job. The man Job was a very, very righteous man, as God declares Job to be a very righteous man. There is none like him on the face of the earth. And that's basically the way he's introduced. And in the book of Job, in chapter 13, well, let's actually read the first chapter in verse 1. And to give us an idea what God thought about this man. And chapter 1 and verse 1 is described as a blameless person. You know, there was a man in the land of Oz, or Uz in Hebrew, that was in the east in Babylon, whose name was Job, or Iov in Hebrew. And that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil. So he was a very righteous man. And that's what God thought about him too. He was a very rich man. And so later on when you read in verse 6, and there was a day when the sons of God, speaking by the angels, came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them, you see. So during that period of time, even though he became Satan, God still allows him to come up to heaven. And that's why, as we read in Revelation, he's no longer going to be able to go to heaven. He's cast down. He and his demons. But here God allows Satan, he allows also demons to come now and then to heaven to these periodic conferences. And he has a reason for doing it. He's using them to his own, for his own plans. And so the Lord, in verse 7, the Lord said to Satan, "Where do you come from?" And so Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." So he goes around, all around, you know. He checks up on his people, on his children, so to speak, that he deceived, that he led, astray into false religions. And now and then, intervenes in their lives and brings evil upon them and so forth. That was a part of his work, so to speak, on this earth. And God allows him for a purpose. Here's the reason for it. Verse 8, then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" So you know the way God speaks about Job. Job was a righteous man. Job knew God. Job worshipped God. And whatever Job believed in was true. Not lies. Not deceptions. So it's important to understand it. And so it goes for all the servants of God. They were not men of unrighteousness. They were men of righteousness. So whatever they spoke was true. So they should be believed. Not the one that deceives the whole world or his teachers. All those that come from him don't even know it. And so, in chapter 14, let's read in verse 13. At this time, if you know the story, Job was being afflicted by the devil, and that was according to the plan of God for a good reason, for a purpose. As you can see at the end of the book, the reason for it. And so in verse 13, Job says, "Oh, that you would hide me in the grave." You see, and the grave is when you the place where you are buried, in the ground. "That you would conceal me until your wrath is past." In other words, just let me die, let me go into the grave, until this is over. "That you would appoint me a set time and remember me." What is he talking about? You see, when you go to the grave, you await for the last day, for the resurrection. Then God resurrects your body and gives you life again. And then you are alive. And he puts your spirit back in you. And that is the new body that he gives you, obviously, not the one that went into the ground. And so that's what he's saying. Just let me die. Let me go to the grave. Let me go to the dirt, where I came from. So to speak, as God told Adam, "For dust you are, and unto dust you shall return." This is where you came from. This is where you go back to. So, he said, let me stay there until the time comes, and, the appointed time, and remember me at that time. And then he's asking the question, in verse 14, "If a man dies, shall he live again?" You see, there is a contrast there between death and life. When you are alive, you are alive. You are not dead. When you are dead, you are not alive. You are dead. You see? And when you are dead, you are in the grave. You don't exist. You're just there, like dirt. So he says, if a man dies, he's asking the question, shall he live again? Well, of course he knows that he will. That's why he said earlier, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. I'll be in the grave, yes, but the resurrection is coming, and then I'll come back to life. And so he says, all the days of my heart service I will wait till my change comes. You see? In other words, I'm going to be alive, then I'm going to die, I'm going to be in the grave until the change comes. And when you study the Bible, you go on, you go to the New Testament or the Old Testament, and you find out what it means. When the resurrection comes, the change comes from mortal beings that we have been, and we were corrupted. Now we're going to receive a spirit body. That's what the change is all about. Then we're going to live eternally. And so he says, till my change comes, and you shall call, and I will answer you. And this statement will become more meaningful as we go later on into the New Testament. And before that, in other passages in the prophets. You shall call, and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. Speaking about Job himself. And all of us, we are all the work of the hands of God. And God allows us a period of time to be alive, and then we die, we go to the grave, and then later on, at the end time, the Bible makes it very plain, God is going to bring on the resurrection. He's going to bring us back to life, and he's going to put our spirit that he put in us to begin with, when we were born, and then we lived, and then we died, and the spirit departed. And he's going to put the Spirit again back in us in the new body that he will give us, and then we'll be alive again. But in between, you're either dead or you're either alive. You cannot be both. You see? And then let's go on to Psalm chapter 30. Because through the Scriptures, as we go through it, you can see what God taught, what Moses taught, what the prophets taught, and none of them taught anything else but the purity of the truth. There are no lies in the truth. But unfortunately, there are a lot of lies out there because Satan, the devil, deceives the whole world, and so people believe a lot of lies. And they base their religions and doctrines and faith on that. In Psalm 30, this is what David is saying. In Psalm 30, verses 8 and 9. I cried out to you, O Eternal, O Lord, and to the Lord I made supplication. And this is what he's saying. What profit, verse 9, what profit is there in my blood when I go to the pit, that is to the grave, to the ground? And then he's asking the question, will the dust praise you? In other words, when you go to the dust and you become dust, can the dust praise you? When you're dead, can a dead person praise you? Will it declare your truth? Of course not. That's the answer. So, in other words, he's pleading with God. Keep me alive. Because as long as I'm alive, I can serve you, I can praise you, I can worship you. You see, but when I go to the grave, when I go to the pit, when I go to the dust, I cannot declare your truth. I cannot praise you. Why? Because I don't exist at that point. You see? And then Psalm 88, we continue. And in Psalm 88, we get a little bit more information there about this teaching of life and death. And what does it mean? As God taught it, not as men did, not as the devil did. In Psalm 88, verses 9 to 12, we read, again, David is saying, well, in this case, it's not David, it's another one of the temple musicians. We read in verse 9, my eye wastes away because of affliction. Lord, I have called daily upon you. I have stretched out my hands to you. And then he too is asking the questions. Will you work wonders for the dead? Shall the dead arise and praise you? Just like David said. Shall your loving kindnesses be declared in the grave? Or your faithfulness in the place of destruction? And that's where the grave is. You're totally corrupted and destroyed. You become dust. You disintegrate. You become no more. Verse 12. Shall your wonders be known in the dark? That is, in the grave when you're dead. And your righteousness in the land of forgetfulness? See, it's a land where you don't remember anything. Well, obviously the answer is not. Because as long as you're alive, you can do it. But when you are dead, that's it. You're in darkness. You're in a state of destruction, of corruption. You're dust. You see? You're not thinking. It's a land of forgetfulness. No thoughts go through you. Why? Because you're dead. Because that's what death means. Total cessation of life. You see? But the false doctrine of heaven and hell taught that death does not mean total cessation of life, but a life in a different form. And that's not a biblical teaching. And then we go to Psalm 146. We read more about it. And in Psalm 146, this is what we read in verses 3 and 4. Do not put your trust in princes. This is what the psalmist is saying, warning all mankind. Don't put your trust in princes, nor in a son of man in whom there is no help. And people do that. And they are disappointed. And people put their faith in their teachers, in their spiritual teachers, in their religious teachers. And they are disappointed. Because they are being taught lies, along with some truth. And so God is telling us through this writer of the Psalms, don't do that. Don't put your trust in the prince, in other words, in the great or the lowly. Don't put your trust in the Son of Man in whom there is no help. Verse 4. Why? Because his spirit departs. You see? It's a spirit that is in us, that God placed in us. It's not a soul, as people call it, even though it is used in a synonymous way, soul and spirit. But God generally calls it the spirit. Ruach, in Hebrew, wind. This is what God put in us in the beginning of life, and at the end of life, he takes it away. But it's not a person, just the animating. It's just like electricity, you know. You put electricity in the wire, and as long as there is electricity, you can do things. You can move things. You can, you know, cause light and things like that. But when it's gone, it's gone. But it's not a person. It's a spirit essence. It's a power. Power of intellect, of wisdom, of animation, and so forth, emotions. And so he says, his spirit departs. He returns to his earth. That is, the spirit departs, but he returns to the earth. In that very day, in Hebrew it says, his eshtonot, or eshtonotav, which means his thoughts. In that very day, his thoughts perish. In other words, when you're dead, you don't think anymore. Dead people don't think. And yet with the doctrine of the immortality of the soul, they think that as soon as your body is dead, you know, the real you comes out, and that real you thinks. Well, God says, no, you don't think. Your thoughts perish. That's the end of you. Unless there is a resurrection, you'll never exist anymore. Unless God resurrects your body, and of course, it's a metaphor, it's not the body that was corrupted, but God is going to bring you out of the grave, so to speak, metaphorically, and is going to give you a new body, a physical body, and you're going to be on this earth, and God is going to put the spirit that used to be in you back in you. And then you'll be alive again. And that's what the resurrection from the dead is all about. That all the people of God have believed until the false doctrine of the immortality of the soul entered again, unfortunately, into the minds of men. But should have known better. And then let's continue with Ecclesiastes now, where Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, tells us, speaking about this subject. And let's go to Ecclesiastes in chapter 3, where this is what Solomon is saying. In chapter 3 and verses 19 and 21. In the beginning of the chapter, you know, he's talking about that there is a time for everything, a time to be born, a time to die, and so forth. You know, when you're born to life. When you die, that's it, you're gone. You're either alive or you're dead. And in chapter 3 again, in verse 19, this is what he says. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so dies the other. You see, when we die, that's it. We all go to the same place. They all have one breath. You see, this is what gives us life, the oxygen. And when God put the breath of life into Adam, he began to breathe and therefore to be alive. And when that breath is gone, you're gone. You know, your brain doesn't function, therefore you don't think anymore. You don't know that you exist. That's the end of it. And so he says, surely they all have one breath, you know. Just like human beings and animals, all the same in that way. Man has no advantage over animals, for all is vanity. All is vain. All is like vapor. All go to one place. Verse 20, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust. And that's what God told Adam and Eve. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. That's going to be your end. Unless I resurrect you, you'll never exist anymore. And so he says, he's asking in verse 1, who knows the spirit of the sons of men? See, it's a spirit. Ruach, wind. It's not a soul. You see, people began to call it soul, and the thing that they, you know, the soul is a person within you. The Bible generally calls it the spirit. And that spirit that is in you is not somebody in you, it's you. And that spirit functions only through your brain. It sees through your eyes, it hears through your ears, it speaks through your mouth, it functions through your body and nervous system and all that. But when the breath of life goes, the body shuts down and the spirit departs. And the spirit cannot function without that body. It cannot talk, it cannot think, it cannot, you know, feel anything. And that's the way God made it. Until God resurrects your body, and resurrection of the body means that, as Paul explains it, you know, whatever goes into the ground gets corrupted, and what comes out of it is not the very thing that went down. Just like with the seed that you put in the ground, what comes out of it is it's totally different. And so God gives us a new body, a spirit body now, in the resurrection. First a physical body, and then spirit body, and then he puts a spirit in us. And that's how we, you know, all come before the judgment day. And we stand before God, and God judges us whether we are worthy of having life forever or destruction. And so this is what he's asking you. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal which goes down to the earth? You see? So our spirit goes upward, and our body goes down to the earth. Please turn now the tape to the other side.